For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. This evening I want to talk about another one of these old cases from Dogen's collection of koans and his verses. This is number 16. It's an old story, and there are lots of commentary on it, but it's an important story for us. So I'll read just the story and the verse, Dogen's verse first, and then go back. Zen Master Fayan once visited Zen Master Luohan Dizong Guichen. Guichen asked, "Elder, where are you going?" Fayan said, "I'm wandering around on pilgrimage." Guichen asked, "What's the point of your pilgrimage?" Fayan said, "I don't know." Guichen said, "Not knowing is most intimate." Fayan widely opened up realization. Dogen wrote a verse about this saying, "Cavorting freely, all is clear," and again, he freely cavorts. How can pilgrimage be bound by straight or twisting ropes? If we lack great achievement, by one square inch, this knowing becomes increasingly small, two or three cords. So there's a lot in this story. I'm just going to touch on it tonight. So this Zen master, the teacher in the story, Luohan Dizong. His name Dizong is Chinese for Jizo, so he's actually named after the earth womb bodhisattva, Jizo, who cares for children and women and people in the intermediate realm. But anyway, that was just his name, but a very respected teacher. And Fayan is the monk here, and Dizong asked him, "Where are you going?" And Fayan said, "I'm wandering around in pilgrimage." And later on, Fayan became founder of one of the five houses of Chan. So he became a very important figure. But he said, "I'm wandering around on pilgrimage." So this sense of pilgrimage is important in the story too. What does it mean to wander around on pilgrimage? Literally in this story, he's one of these monks who's wandering around checking out different teachers, checking himself out with different teachers. And this was a tradition in China and at times in Japan and now in America too. So a number of you have visited various teachers. More basically, what is our pilgrimage? So when he heard that, when Dogen heard that his teacher Ru Jing in China had passed away, he said, "Oh, now he's ended his pilgrimage. How sad." We all, one way or another, in this generation, I think, have been wandering around in pilgrimage, looking around. What is it? What are we doing here? What's the point of all of this? How do we live in this world, in this difficult world? Anyway, Fayan said, "I'm wandering around on pilgrimage." And Dizong Guichen said, "Oh, what's the point of your pilgrimage?" And Fayan said, "I don't know." So we've been studying this "I don't know" for 1,000 years. Guichen said, "Not knowing is most intimate." So this is good to remember. Not knowing is most intimate. Not knowing is deepest. The story has to do with how do we know, or what do we know, or what is the nature of knowing, or of not knowing. So Dogen says in Genjo Koan, when you're out in the middle of the ocean or in the middle of a great lake and you look around, it's just like a circle. We don't see the details of the shoreline. So there is so much we don't know. Given every experience and of every person in this room now and all of the people we've all met and all of the places we've all been and all of that that is part of who we each are on our seat, it's, you know, how could we possibly know what's happening in this room? Even the biggest hard drive in the world. Anyway, not knowing is most intimate. And when we think we know something, that's sort of, you know, and sometimes we do know things. I mean, all of you know a lot of things. Each one of you has a wide body of knowledge. And do you really know what you know? How do you know what you know? There's lots of ways of knowing things. So even if you've been to the finest schools, how do we know? How do we know the ache in our shoulders or the discomfort in our lower back or the question that has come to you this week or this lifetime? There's so much that we don't know. So this old teacher said, not knowing is most intimate. Can we just be in not knowing? But it's more complicated than that. So we chanted the harmony of difference and sameness. And there's also a harmony or a relationship of knowing and not knowing that's at work here. The verse in this group of koans that Dogen collected, he said, Dogen said, cavorting freely, all is clear. And again, he freely cavorts. So he's talking about the story. And actually, there's a cavorting freely, dong dong in Japanese, toto in Chinese, toto in Japanese, is a nickname for an old master of the Northern School who was known for his endless pilgrimages. Mm-hmm. So Dogen is using the meaning cavorting freely, but also this kind of alludes to this old master who went on many pilgrimages. And one time, this cavorting freely master was called before Empress Wu. It was the great, powerful empress. She's gotten a bad rap in history, but maybe that's because China is so patriarchal and they didn't like that there was a woman who was, one of the most powerful emperors, rulers in history of China. Anyway, and she was a great patron of Buddhism too. But when this fellow, cavorting freely, was brought before her, he refused to speak at all. So there's a long tradition in Chan and Zen of not kowtowing to or not respecting the powers that be, the authorities and warlords. Anyway, he refused to speak, but instead he gave her some poems. He gave her 19 poems, and she tried to give him back some gifts and offerings, and he wouldn't accept them. Only one of the poems survives. It's called Clarifying the Source. And he got his nickname, Cavorting Freely, from this poem, because it ends with the lines, "Today I entrust all to clarity." No, I'm sorry, excuse me. "Today I entrust all to destiny, cavorting freely." I leave all to destiny. I just, it's like saying I trust Sasa. "Today I entrust all to destiny, cavorting freely. Tomorrow I cavort freely, entrusting all to destiny. In the mind I clearly know everything. In a while I have become a dull fool." For a while I have become a dull fool. So this is a play on pilgrim cavorting freely who says he clearly knows everything, as opposed to Fa Yun has said, "I don't know," about his pilgrimage. So there's a lot going on in all the, on all of these old Chinese verses. There's references and so forth. But anyway, Dogen said, cavorting freely, all is clear. And again, he freely cavorts. How can pilgrimage be bound by straight or twisting ropes? So, you know, maybe it's, maybe things are so difficult in our society that we don't have some idea of how things belong and where things belong and how everything is straight and narrow. So maybe that's not so much our problem anymore. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the, you know, official versions of everything, everything is all explained and so forth. But Dogen says, how can pilgrimage be bound by straight or twisting ropes? So our pilgrimage isn't a straight line, but it's not bound by twisting either. If we lack great achievement by one square inch, Dogen says, this knowing becomes increasingly small, two or three quarts. You know, in some ways, maybe he's talking, Dogen here is praising fully knowing. If we lack great achievement by one square inch, he's saying we should fully realize. But what is this knowing? What is this not knowing? This is a deep problem for us. How do we know what we know? Even in physics, you know, I think it's Heisenberg principle, they say that if you know where the particle is, you don't know how fast it's moving, or and vice versa. We can't pin things down. The basic Buddhist truth is the ungraspability of everything or anything. Anything we say misses. We can't rely on not. So, you know, he said not knowing is the most intimate, or not knowing is closest. And yeah, maybe to realize that we don't know, or to know that we don't know, it's good to know what you don't know. If we think when we think we know something, we can get into a lot of trouble. So I want to add some other stories, or comments about this. This basic story about not knowing is most intimate, or not knowing is nearest. In another place in his extensive record, Dogen tells the story and has a prose comment. And he says, I would respond to Dzong Wuchen, is not knowing most intimate, or is knowing most intimate? I completely leave the greatest intimacy to intimacy, Dogen says. But now I ask Dzong, what is this intimacy? What does it mean to be close? What does it mean to be intimate with ourselves, with each other, with reality, with the world? How do we get close to this situation where we can see, you know, the problems in our lives and the problems in the world, and, you know, and sometimes we think we know how things should be, or we know, you know, how to respond. And yet, this not knowing, Dzong said, is closest. So, it's hard to settle in any one place. There's a famous story. So this same story is in the Book of Serenity, chosen by Hongzhi. And he has a verse comment, but the commentator, Wansong, says about this, he refers to Nanchuan, who said, the way is not in knowing or in not knowing. Knowing is false consciousness, not knowing is indifference. So this is from that famous story that has been spoken of here a number of times, where the great Jiazhou asked his teacher Nanchuan, what is the way? And Nanchuan said, ordinary mind, or everyday mind is the way. And Jiazhou asked, well, how do I get there? And Nanchuan said, the more you try and approach it, the further away you get. And then the point here, Jiazhou said, well, how do I know if this is it or not? And Nanchuan said, the way is not in knowing, and it's not in not knowing. Knowing is just false consciousness. Knowing is just our delusion, our idea, just our opinion. Not knowing is indifference. So how do we find the way between knowing and not knowing? How do we find the integration of this? And Wansong says, now when people hear it said that not knowing is nearest, as in this story, and that this is where Fayan was enlightened, they immediately go over to just not knowing, not understanding that just this is it. So this not knowing doesn't mean just not knowing. I mean, you know, there's lots of people, there's lots of not knowing in the world. There's lots of ignorance. We partake of that, and the world is a mess because of it. So it's not that we can just rely on not knowing anything. Of course, there's lots of stuff we each know, and lots of stuff we know, you know, together. But okay, so what does it mean to knowing, to know, and what does it mean to be close, to be intimate with our reality? Wansong has said some other interesting things in his commentary. He also refers to another old master who said, he quotes a number of old masters. So the way these stories and the commentaries work is they're commentaries on commentaries on commentaries, and lots of different references to teachers who've referred to this. One said that one word, knowing, is the gate of myriad wonders. So we shouldn't disdain knowing. But what does it mean to know? How do we know? What do we really know? Just affirm totally when affirming, but don't settle down in affirmation. Deny totally when denying, but don't settle down in denial. Passing through all the 5 degrees of ultimate in particular, how could you die under one phrase? So we can't rely on not knowing, even though not knowing is nearest. This is a sensitive and dynamic issue. What is it we know? And what is it we don't know? And how do we proceed amidst not knowing? Even though, you know, again, there's lots of stuff each of us know. Then there's another saying, in walking and sitting, just hold to the moment before thought arises. Look into it, and you'll see not seeing. And then put it to one side. When you direct your effort like this, rest does not interfere with meditation, and meditation does not interfere with rest. So, look at that moment before the thought arises. This is a Zazen instruction, a meditation instruction. And there's others that are related to it. But pay attention as we're sitting. It's not about having some particular state of mind. Our Zazen isn't about finding some perfect state of being or state of awareness or understanding. But can you pay attention to that space just before the thought, before any thought arises? What is that place? Is it knowing? Is it not knowing? Study this. So this, he wants to quote a number of other really interesting sayings. And so I'll just repeat some of these and say a little bit, and then we can have some discussion. But maybe first I'll read Hongzhe's verse. Now, having studied to the full, it's like before, having shed entirely the finest thread, he reaches not knowing. Let it be short, let it be long. Stop cutting and patching, going along with the high, along with the low, it levels itself. The abundance or scarcity of the house is used according to the occasion. So, how do we use knowing? How do we use not knowing? How is not knowing helpful? When is it helpful to know something? It's easy to get confused. Be careful. Roaming serenely in the land, he goes where his feet takes him. The purpose of 10 years pilgrimage. Clearly he's turned his back on one pair of eyebrows. So, again, what's this pilgrimage about? C.S. Eliot says that the point of all our wandering is to come back to the place where we started and know it for the first time. So here we are, you know. You've all come here to settle in Zazen tonight and hear a little Dharma, maybe. And what are we doing? How are we doing this together? How do we support each other? How do we find our way of living and responding to the problems of the world and our own life? If you think you know, that's a problem. If you hold on to not knowing, that's a problem too. Now, not knowing is nearest, but okay. How do we proceed? So a wonderful text by Yanto says, "Hitherto deluded about enlightenment, seeming deluded, now awakened from delusion, it's not enlightenment. Therefore it's said, after complete enlightenment, one again is the same as someone who is not yet enlightened." So the point of our practice isn't to get some enlightenment. That's not a commodity we can get down at the corner store. And, you know, when we are fully awakened, it's the same as if we, you know, maybe it's the same as if we never practiced. I don't know. It's this ignorance and awareness, very close. How do we not know without falling into the kind of ignorance that destroys the world? How do we not know without ignoring the suffering of the world? So this is a very tricky story. Couple more things. This is from Linji, great master Rinzai. He asked Luopo, "Where do you come from?" And Luopo said, "From Luan City." Linji said, "There's something I would ask about. May I?" Luopo said, "I don't understand." And Linji said, "Even searching throughout the whole of China, it's hard to find one who doesn't understand." So, can you actually be one who doesn't understand? Can you live and work and respond and allow your love and to express itself in the world from not understanding? Maybe it's too easy to understand. Anyway, the last comment. Well, there's a couple more good ones, but this is from the great teacher Songjia, who said, "The non-difference of all things doesn't mean that you add to a duck's legs and cut a crane's legs. Level mountains to fill valleys, thereafter considering them no different." So this has to do with the sameness and difference we chanted about. You know, it's not that we make not knowing and knowing the same. They're not the same. How do we know what we know? How do we allow not knowing to guide us? Maybe I'll pause there. Maybe I'll just go back to the original story. So Zen Master Kalyan, the way the story is told, he was already a teacher, but he was going around visiting other teachers, testing himself. And he met Dzong and asked, "Elder, where are you going?" And Kalyan said, "I'm wandering around on pilgrimage." What's it like to wander around on pilgrimage? What is the point of our pilgrimage? And that's what Dzong asks. What is the point of your pilgrimage? So, this is a real question. What is the point of your pilgrimage? How is it that you showed up at Ancient Dragon? Or how is it that you showed up in Chicago? Or how is it that you showed up in this life? What's the point of your pilgrimage? And Fayyad was quite honest. He said, "I don't know." And Dzong agreed, saying, "Not knowing is most intimate." So, comments, questions, responses? Does anybody know a response or not know a response?
I think it's good to talk to you. I especially like that final point about what is the point of your pilgrimage, and that not knowing is perhaps the best answer. One line that you said that got me thinking was that the more you... It was something along the lines of the more you try to get there, the farther away you are from it.
Yes.
And it got me thinking about the place and purpose of effort in the practice. And so I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how effort ought to manifest itself given that.
Yeah, good question. Where do we apply ourselves? Where do we place our effort? What is the point of our effort? So, Suki Roshi talked about beginner's mind. So maybe our effort is to forget all the things we think we know, or to not be caught by that, or to not hold on to that. It's not easy being a beginner. You know, after you sit sitting for a little while and you've read a little bit, or you've heard a few talks, you know, you might think you know something about all this.
Mm-hmm.
And you might, but, you know, how do we enjoy each inhale and exhale without being caught by some sense of what that is? How do we proceed in the world without projecting ourselves on and all the things we know onto the world? How can we meet reality, whatever that is? How can we meet the situation we're in? How can we meet the problems we want to help respond to in a way that is not caught by all the stuff that we know? How do we... So that this effort is subtle. It's not effort to get somewhere or accomplish something. It's an effort to actually be real, to be in the situation we're in. And, you know, again, we all know a lot of stuff, and it's not that that's bad and you should get rid of that exactly, but how do we find our freshness? So it's a funny kind of effort. It's the effort to let go without pushing things away. To call it effort is a little too much. I don't know, does anybody else have a response for Will? Because it's a really important, good question. Yes, Kent.
Is there an element of faith in not knowing?
Yeah, that's an interesting word, faith. And I think that's right. That's exactly right. Faith, the English word faith, as a translator, I, you know, sometimes try and avoid. I feel like it needs to be unpacked, because our idea in Western culture of faith is believing in something we know. So we know, you know, scripture and verse, and we think we can rely on that. So that's not the faith you're speaking of. How do we trust and have the confidence to take the next step, or to try something, or to respond, to settle enough so that we're not reacting out of some dogma to the stuff in the world, but responding to the freshness of the situation. So yeah, there's a kind of confidence or trust that we can only get from trial and error, and from making lots of mistakes, and from being willing to face the sadness and confusion of reality in our lives. But yeah, we can call that faith, and it's important. But it's also, it's a kind of, again, it's part of the commentaries on all of this, is that we can't hold on to what we think we know, but we also can't hold on to not knowing. So in the middle of that, what is that integration of that harmony of knowing and not knowing that we can trust, that it can allow us to proceed? So, yeah, in that sense, faith is a good thing to a good point to add in here. Thank you. Other comments or responses? Douglas?
Well, I think, you know, it's sort of surprising that Dogen didn't come back and say, well, it's not knowing, it's not that knowing, it's non-knowing. And so,
oh, yeah. So, beyond knowing and not knowing.
Yeah.
And that, excuse me, but that's actually part of the point of the story. It's not knowing. It's this not knowing that is nearest isn't the knowing, the not knowing of not knowing and knowing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's perfectly clear from the conversation. They're having an intelligent discussion. They clearly know and understand what's going on. But they're not using that knowing to grasp or control. They're not saying, we figured it out and this is the answer. That's knowing. That's knowing and not knowing is a dichotomy, and that's not what they're doing. They're not holding on to that.
Yeah, that kind of knowing shuts down possibilities.
It's certainly possible to know without holding on to it, mm-hmm. and to sort of step out of that thinking that knowing and not knowing. I think that's somewhat what we do. As far as effort is concerned, I think it's for me, it's always a mistake to try hard when I'm doing Zazen. You know, Zazen is not about strain. It's about being willing, but not, it's not willing something to happen, it's being willing. It's being, to the extent there's an effort, I think it's the effort of involving perseverance and patience, being willing to be bad on the cushion, but not straining to accomplish something. I think that's the point of effort. Without this putting your butt on the cushion, over and over again, being willing to do this, as if you do whatever you're doing, then nothing happens.
Thank you. So, time for one last comment or response, Niels?
I refer to somebody else.
Anybody else have? So, okay, David, you trump Derek. Go ahead.
two comments, if I may. When you were talking before, I reminded of something I learned way back in high school about Einstein, who said, sometimes when you're with a problem, you know, you can't find it. And then sitting quietly under the tree, the answer will politely come up to you and say, here I am.
Mm. Yeah.
This whole sense is you sometimes just have to let go and just let be. But where I find myself, like especially now, I have two customers who want something they needed to have by a certain time. This is a fixed agenda for them. And it's just, at the same time, they're stepping in their wrong way by not giving me all the data that I need to complete. And how do I get through this? And how do I, you know, help them get to their goal? And it's fine when I'm sitting in a chair and facing a wall, but when I get into the world of business and trying to meet people's needs, even as crazy as it may seem, it gets a little more difficult. I find it easier to care for the people than to try to accomplish the things. But there's a finite pressure that's always pushing on you. And it's difficult. I don't think the monks who are, you mentioned the story, are not facing those same type of situations. And I'm thinking of the Metta Sutra, which says, you know, don't submerge yourself into the things of the world. You know, well, I'm submerged, maybe. You know, how do I unsubmerge myself?
Well, if I may, that's the struggle, I don't know if that's the right word, that's the issue that we all face being a lay non-residential practice place, that we're all in the world in various ways. We all have business in the world in various ways, and yet we are practicing this practice to find a space from which to respond. And so I think in terms of that question, it's this story and this issue of knowing and not knowing is helpful, to not get caught on either side. And, you know, there is sort of a preference for not knowing. So to be willing to hear what those people who are asking you for things are saying, and without your idea of what it should be. So this is a challenge, you know. This is the challenge of our practice here. And so thank you all for your pilgrimages and finding your way here. We'll close now with the four Bodhisattva vows, which are three times.